Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. Today we've got a very special guest, a man who we're very excited to speak to. He's carved a very similar path to our own. He's a business leader, a sales influencer. He's always on LinkedIn like we are, and he's an all-round wealth of knowledge and someone I've always enjoyed talking to. It's the co-founder of Sales Driven, Antoine Marsden. Antoine, how are you, sir?
Very good, thank you, Zach, and good to be on. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. So we always start off the same way. If you could, for anyone who doesn't know you, who are you and what problem do you solve?
So I guess the best way to put it is that I like to solve the problem of the outbound sales motion. So we're very focused on getting information from an audience that our customers are targeting. So specifically focused on the development of where is that buyer along their journey, when is the right time to approach that buyer, and how likely is it that they actually have the problem and that they're willing to solve the problem in order to get them into a conversation with our customers. So kind of like, you know, engineering these you know, the whole kind of outbound motion, and that's where we excel as a business.
Okay. And when did you realize there might be a bit of a gap in the market for that?
Interestingly, you know, these things I think come about in times of distress or times of difficulty. And for us, it was really COVID. We could see that there was going to be a move to a lot more virtual selling. There was going to be difficulty for those people that were in field sales that then had to come back and sit at home and get in touch with people by cold calling. And I've been a 360 seller all my life, so I've always set my own meetings and closed my own deals. And I felt that there was a lot of people that would be missing out on the opportunity of not having something set up for them because that's all they'd ever known. So we felt that there was a really interesting gap there where we could help people to define their market better and also get people into better conversations that they weren't going to be able to do by themselves.
That is, you know, I knew we were similar, but that is the same. So just the timeline's different, probably about a year and a bit after, but that's exactly why we started this off. And right. I was working for a marketing agency, but the story was the same. Got this sales team. I don't really know what they do anymore because they used to go out to probably cocaine lunches and take people out and get them drunk once a quarter, all the big accounts. Yeah. And then now that I actually really need them to generate some stuff, it's not happening. Yeah. So did you notice that as well, that suddenly like salespeople were getting a bit exposed, sales teams were getting a bit exposed?
Yeah, massively getting exposed. And it was a conversation that, you know, I just started having these conversations with people just offline, just trying to understand a little bit more about their world. And you know, the COVID, the impact of COVID was obviously real. It happened a lot quicker than a lot of people anticipated, and that left them in a quandary as to what do we do now? How do we get these people trained up to be able to have these conversations on the phone, not be scared of rejection, not be scared of, you know, actually just making those dials every day and then, you know, continuing that process. And that for me was a bit of a light bulb moment for my business partner, who you guys know as well, Shane. It was, we can make this happen. Like we've had to do this for ourselves. We can make this happen for others, and we can build a business in whilst we're doing it.
It's because you've got that that kind of self startup, which I assume, and I know that I've heard the story from Zach about like why he started, and he was just like, if I'm doing this in COVID in my bedroom, whereas I know so many salespeople working through COVID in their bedroom, probably had their feet up and were watching Netflix, and there's not that same drive. So obviously, with us being in very similar lanes, I'm going to hit you straight away with the hard questions. So say I'm a sales leader, you can call me whatever you want, a VP, a sales director, and I've got the two choices that are on the table, to either hire internally and do it all myself, or to outsource it. What decision should they be making, why, and all the variables in between?
I think if you're a sales leader and you're looking at these two areas, you've got to look at, firstly, I believe, which is a really important thing, is how much time do you have and how much is your time worth, right? As a sales leader, you're sitting at the top of the tree in terms of, you know, kind of your experience, your skill set, what you can bring to a company in terms of organization, strategy, frameworks, you know, building a team, building a winning culture, one that's going to go out and get you those results. But do you have the time to do what an outsourced company can do for you? You have to worry about your hiring. You have to worry about the cost of the hiring. You have to worry about those people actually staying in the business, the retention. You have to worry about building out the framework, building out the scripts. You have to worry about, you know, managing those people every single day. You have to worry about how many, you know, are they having the right number of conversations? What do those conversations sound like? Doing the coaching in between. You've got all of these things that you need to build. What does my outbound look like from the perspective of, do I add emails to this? Do I add, you know, how many people that sit on this campaign? There's a ton of stuff that you've got to do as a sales leader. Whereas an outsourced agency is doing this stuff every single day. They've got all the tech that's required to perform outbound at its most optimum. They have that ability to cover a market quicker than you can potentially do so by yourself. You're looking for somebody that can potentially basically plug in, understand your message, be able to construct your message or reconstruct your message in a way that gets you responses quicker, but also helps you to understand where your audience is or where your targets are in the market at that time. Just because you set out today and you say, okay, great, I'm going to get my team to go and speak to these people and we're going to go and get X results, doesn't mean it's going to happen. So it's all about saying, okay, well, if my time is 200 quid or 300 quid an hour, and I've got to spend 6 months and, you know, 6 hours a day in building this out, does that make sense for my time? If I just, or do I just give it to an agency and get them to do that bit for me and work with them in such a way that is collaborative? I understand what they're doing, and there's just transparency and that trust there. And they also require from me certain elements to be able to do their job as effectively as possible so that we can have something that works synonymously. And I think that that's really a question that people need to ask themselves.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. A lot of people come to us, and you probably have it the same, and it's like, I need a quick fix. But probably a lot of people aren't as self-aware to say, like, okay, these are the options and these are kind of the choices. Like, so typically, you worded it so beautifully there, but if we take it a little bit further, so typically when people are saying, and it's one I've heard a million times, it's like, that's going to be so much more expensive than doing it internally. I think, like, what is the response there? Is it kind of down the lane of what you were saying there about time?
For me, it's to what extent, right? It's, you know, you when people will come to us saying that, yeah, we need results immediately or a shot in the arm, and I've been guilty of this in the past, right? We're coming up to our third year. I've been guilty of saying, yeah, you know, I think that we should be able to do that. But typically, when you ask them the question of if they've done it themselves, the answer is coming back no, right? Because they're trying to push you to do something very, very quickly. If they were so good at doing it, they wouldn't hire you to do it, right? So that's number one for me. There's definitely more that you need to dive into to understand why those results need to be now. Because I don't see outbound as a short-term process. I don't see it as to give you a short-term outcome. I believe it can give you some wins short-term, but that's not because it's predictable or because we're, you know, the gods of outbound. It's because we got a little bit of luck along the way and somebody resonated with the messaging and they were in the right frame to buy this solution or to buy something like this at this point of time. What we're actually trying to do is we're trying to build out your sales motion so it gives you a level of predictability, and that takes time. And if you could do it, and if you were happy to do it, you would never contract an outbound agency, you would never enter into those discussions, because you would know internally that there is going to be time associated to this, there's going to be a significant cost associated to this. So therefore, what I need to be looking at is the activity that's being done and the work that's being done and that's been built, is that going to get me to my goal? And am I going to give it enough time for us to be able to reach that outcome? And I think that that's an important thing that a lot of people miss when they get into these types of conversations. It's just, all right, we're going to pay you X because we're going to get X back in this amount of time. And it's not a linear process like that, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I think you absolutely nailed it there. So for any sales leaders that are listening, and you would have seen many, we'll call them patients in this instance. So you're the doctor and they're coming into your surgery. What for any sales leaders who maybe haven't analysed themselves or haven't, they might have some symptoms but they're not aware of them. What do those people look like? What are they like struggling with at the moment? What is the perfect patient in your eyes?
So it's a good question. It's an interesting question. I think it's somebody that's been able to diagnose that what they need is going to take them much more time than what they have available, right? And then it's going to come down to, all right, so which part of this process is the most painful for me? Okay, because there's a number of ways in which we can help. I can prescribe you five different things to actually take, right? But you might not need to take those five pills. You might just need to take two of them. That could be your data. It could be the actual outbound prospecting. It could be the building of a team or team development. Whatever those cases, whatever it might be, you need to have done the work to understand where is going to take the most of my time that I cannot give the due kind of dedication to actually building. So I can go off and run with the things that I do well and that I'm able to control consistently. And then the other part of it is where I need to have a conversation to understand who can help me do this in a better way. So I think that that's really the type. I'd be looking at people that had come in and they said, look, you know, I've done a bit of a Google search. I've understood these things are the likely things that are going to be impacting on me. These things I can manage myself in terms of I need to eat a bit better. I need to do a bit more in terms of fitness. I can see that. But in terms of these things that I'm struggling with, I need a bit more help and a bit more clarification as to what I can do that's going to help me there.
So true, so true. I think that leans on we're big on that motivation piece as well, like how motivated is someone to do it and all those sort of questions around, yeah, if you know you should be eating better, why aren't you?
Yeah.
If you know you should close more deals, why are you not doing? If you know you should get more referrals, why are you not doing it?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, couldn't agree more. All right, well look, changing lanes a bit, obviously, yeah. we you're like us, you're a career salesman that's then turned this into running a business. You now have a team of salespeople as well. Mm-hmm. So I've seen like this stat banded around. It looks like the average is between 12 to 18 months for a salesperson to decide, you know what, this isn't for me. And they go after the same 12 to 18 months somewhere else. And it's a industry of high churn rate. So from your experience, why do you think that is?
I think that potentially people don't realize how hard it is up front. I think that there's a big element to that. People kind of think, yeah, you know, I can talk. I can chat a bit. I can get on the phone and have a conversation. But you can't deal with being told no 30 times a day, right? That you're not going to, that I don't want to talk to you right now. You sound like everyone else. Piss off, right? It's there's an element of being able to complement the innate skills that you have with a drive and an ambition to work through the bullshit and the hard times. And I think that for many people, it's like we're in a world of instant gratification, right? I see it so much now. It's like, yeah, but I've done this for a month. I should be good at it by now. I've done this for 2-3 months. Like, I should be amazing at this by now. It's like, you got to put in some hard yards. You got to put in some time. I think from my lessons when I was a young sales guy was, you can keep on moving from company to company, but you never build up your skill set because you haven't got enough skin in the game to really understand, oh shit, okay, this is what I did in month 0 to month 6. This is what I did month 6 to month 12. This is what I did in month 12 to 18. And actually, this is where everything changed. This is where I started to understand my territory better. This is where I started to understand the conversations better, the people that I'm speaking to better. That doesn't come in 3 to 6 months, 12 months, right? 18 months. Sometimes I think when I look back to my career in some of my organizations I worked at, the people that were absolutely smashing it had been there 5, 6, 7 years.
Mm.
They knew their territory. They knew the actual pains that those companies were going through. They knew when certain changes that were coming up in those companies were going to impact on the people that they were speaking with. And then what conversations they needed to have in order to make those conversations that they had internally much more effective. And I think it, you know, it just comes down to how much time are you willing to invest in yourself? How much do you believe in the company that you're working with? I think that's a big point. And a lot of that comes down to the transparency of the organization. I think you guys are pretty much like me. we don't hide anything from our team, right? They know what's happening. They know what the challenges are. They see us in the trenches with them on the phone. So they see me getting the phone put down on me. They will see when somebody says, I don't want to have a conversation with you today, right? They see that it's normal, right? Mm. And the path to success is to keep at it, to keep learning and to keep grinding. And the more that you develop your skill set and your mental kind of capacity and focus for doing the job, the better it is the results that you're going to get in the end.
Do you think there's any ownership that leadership needs to have on this as well? So obviously we can say salespeople aren't managing themselves properly, but do you think there's something in leadership should be, as you say, a lot more upfront in those early days to manage those expectations?
Yeah, I believe that we're massively responsible because we're bringing people into our world, right? Just because they've seen it on the periphery, or they've seen an ad, or they might have seen a couple of vids on YouTube or something on LinkedIn, they don't know the actual world, right? And that's where I think a lot of people have that, they get misconstrued sometimes. They're like, oh yeah, that's definitely for me, that. And they get into it, and there's a bunch of these processes that they've never come across. There's all this internal politics, there's all this other stuff, and they're just like, this ain't for me. This is crazy. I need something a little bit more relaxed, right? So I think if you're that type of sales leader or that type of business leader where you have a set approach and you have a set way of working, you need to clearly articulate that to the people that you're bringing into your business. They need to know what world they're stepping into. If you're a bit spiky, if you're a bit fiery, I may talk like this and I may act like this. I'm a puppy dog underneath. You just need to kind of scratch. You need to understand why I'm doing this. These are our goals. This is our vision. This is why we need to work this way, because otherwise we're not going to get there. And so I think that transparency and that honesty in what they can expect, what they should expect, what you will do, you know, what you will kind of accept and what you won't accept, I think is a big pathway to giving people an understanding that, okay, this is who I represent, this is what I'm contributing to, and this is what I'm going to get out of this for me as a result of doing this work.
Have you developed like a bit of a sixth sense? Do you know when you're interviewing someone now, the warning signs for you're not going to stick compared to if you do? Are there some things that you start looking for?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of something that you build up, right? I think it's easy to hire quick and on the basis of, yeah, they've got good chat, you know, it seems like they've done this and they've done that. But fortunately, you know, before doing this, my first business was I launched a recruitment agency because in my mind, I was like, all right, cool. I want to launch my own business. Initially, it was a sales business. It was an events company I wanted to launch, but I didn't have the funds. So I launched a recruitment business because it's low barrier to entry and it's sales. I don't care what anybody says. You can fight me on this. Recruitment is sales, right? So that's what I started doing. And I was having interviews every single day, screening candidates every single day. And you do get to understand how people can really put on a great performance on camera, but then what they won't deliver that when it actually they go into your customer or into your client or into your business. So I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done on interview style and the types of things that you dig for, the questions that you ask, the situations that you put people into, trying to find out the difficult stuff that they've actually been in, whether they've overcome those or not and why, as opposed to, I mean, I can't remember the last time I hired off of a CV. Right, because again, people can paint what they want on a CV, but when it comes to that direct conversation with somebody and putting somebody on the spot and seeing how they handle something particularly challenging, that's where you start to see, okay, this person can fit into the business or they can't.
Mm. We found that people that may have done like a year or two in like a really hard graft, so it could be like an insurance or like recruitment. If you've kind of got that graft and you know. Where kind of the threshold is, they've got different expectations. So just keeping on that for a moment then, what would you say in like an ideal world, someone walks in for a job interview with, what are the attributes that top sales leaders should be looking for in top performers? What are like the three things maybe?
Relentless drive, right? Somebody that is not fazed by the work that needs to be done, and somebody that won't let anything get in the way of them doing it, right? So not having excuses for why you can't make your dial target or why you haven't been able to speak to a certain number of people in a week or whatever the case may be. So it's relentless drive to achieve an outcome. I think it is also, I think the other things that they would be looking for, and I know that I look for, is it's bandied about a lot, especially on LinkedIn, you guys will know it, but it's being authentic, right? It's that authenticity. It's this person that I'm speaking with, like, if I was to bet my house on it, on the things that they're saying to me, would I believe that that's, you know, that's what they've done and that they're capable of doing that again for me? I don't necessarily look at, I believe that tenure is important, but not overly important. So you could be somewhere for 3 years and coasted for 3 years, right? Or are they coming from an organization or an industry like what you just mentioned, where if you don't perform in those industries, you are out in 3 months, right? There's no two ways about it. Because looking back on my time, there used to be certain companies in my industry where if you spent a year, 18 months, 2 years in those companies, you would get hired by anybody because they used to throw shit at you and you used to have to do a ton of work. If you didn't get those results, you would be out the door. So I think it comes from you know, what's their mindset? What kind of belief systems do they operate on? How hard are they willing to work? What is the why behind why they, you know, why do you want to be in sales? It's a hard job, right?
Like, yeah.
Rejection, why do you want to do this? Why do you want to put yourself through this? You can go and try, you know, be an influencer on Instagram. All these kids are doing this nowadays, right? And live your life that way and take a few pictures and do that, right? Why do you want to do this? And I think it's getting to the crux of that and the real understanding of that is what helps you pick the right people for your organization. I think they always say, you know, you kind of end up finding your tribe, right? And I think that that's true. The more you put yourself out there and the more real you are about what you do and what you face and how you do things, the right people will find themselves to you. And then it's just a matter of, okay, do I believe and do I see that from what they've done in the past, from what they're telling me today, from how they've handled themselves in front of me, that they're going to be somebody that can deliver on what I'd expect in my organization.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I think you touched upon it then as well. It's like sales leaders, I think they, I don't know if it's a thing with maybe power or responsibility, but they can get into a position where they can quickly forget where they came from. And like, I know that if you look at my CV and possibly Zach's, but it's not the, do you know what I mean? It's not the best CV in terms of like, oh, have I been in one job for 10 years?
Yeah.
You know, what makes someone a good candidate? And I think you said it there. It's like having that like drive and just like, I've got a belief and I'm willing to work with you as a company to get, mm-hmm. to the results that you need to. So we're both in the lead generation game. So I know that you would have had many conversations about leads and meetings and appointments or however you kind of divvied them up.
Mm.
And there's probably some great stories in terms of like, wow, thank you so much. I can't believe I had a meeting with this person today. And all right. So in your opinion, what is a good lead?
That's an interesting question. So what is a good lead? A good lead, I would say, how would I break this down? So a good lead is something where you have an understanding of that person, right? So first of all, you know that they're the right person. You've got all the right information for that person. And that person is a direct fit for your solution, right? So when I say direct fit, it doesn't mean that they're ready to buy it right now. A perfect lead is, this person is in the right position for me to have a conversation with about this problem that we help to solve. It doesn't matter if they are not ready now, they're not ready in 3 months, not ready in 6 months. This is the person to speak to on this, because when they do have this problem and it comes into their kind of, you know, front view, then I'm the person that they're going to want to talk to about it, right? And so I think for me, it is somebody that is somebody that is aware that there is a problem that could come up on the horizon that I can help them solve. Somebody that is focused on doing the best that they possibly can for their organization, and somebody that is totally aware that by working with somebody like me or whoever it might be, that they're going to get, I guess, value from the work being done. It might not necessarily be what they had in their mind at the beginning for that outcome, but they're going to get value for the work that's been done. And so that exchange, I think, is very important. It's in knowing that somebody's going to go out to bat for you, and that the actual lead in itself has all of the right qualities of being somebody that you can have as a client for a long time. Because I think that we'd all agree, you know, having a customer for 3 to 6 months isn't where the fun is, right? It's building that thing, that full motion for somebody that over the course of 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, has been able to see significant movement from where they started to where they've ended up. And that's the partnership that they've been able to have with that organization. So I don't know if I've answered the question that you kind of asked me there, but in my mind, a perfect lead kind of boils down to those things.
Yeah, you know, you definitely do. I think you see it all over LinkedIn, and you would have seen it as well, that it's like if you sit down with me for 5-10 minutes or whatever it is, I'll send you an Uber Eats voucher, I'll send you a Starbucks voucher, all this kind of stuff. And it's, I guess the goal is to get the ICP in the door, and it's like sending fruit baskets or whatever. I think the question around it is, do they actually even have that problem? Are they motivated to fix it? And are they, do you know, all of those things. Mm-hmm. But at this moment in time, it's just like, he's got CEO in that sector. That's a right fit. We're going to do everything. And it goes back to our kind of cocaine lunches with the strippers. So what are your thoughts on that in terms of like, but actually it's a sales game. It's a numbers game, as people might say. Just get me in front of anyone and everyone that's a good fit for us.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you want to have that mindset, you can have that mindset, but you're going to be disappointed by the outcome, right? Your TAM might be 10,000 people, right? You might only sell to VPs of sales, 10,000 of them in the UK and Ireland that you can speak to, right? Doesn't mean that any of them are going to be ready, are going to be actually right for you once you get into the detail of it. How many of them are using solutions already? How many of them are in multi-year agreements? How many of them have been told, you've had a number of bad ideas for spend, we're not going to trust you with spend anymore, right? How many people have been, trying to develop something and not been able to get it going? How many people have been saying, okay, well, I've been hearing this and this about these types of organizations, and I'm going to, you don't know any of this stuff, right? Until you get into the conversation. Which is why it's so important that, yeah, cold email and all this kind of stuff, whatever, it's all well and good. It works for a lot of people. I don't believe that there's any faster route to getting information than having a conversation with somebody. And when you get into speaking with somebody, they want to know that you're not going to waste their time and you're going to be mindful and respectful of the job that they have to do. So the whole point is, how many out of those 10,000 have or can see a potential problem for the one that you sold for on the horizon? If they don't have that, what's the point of sending them a basket or a hamper or, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, a box of 100 Snickers or whatever it might be. It's pointless, right? Because they'll take the Snickers, say, thanks very much. This isn't something for us right now. We don't need this, right? And you've just wasted your time and all of that. So I think that the art of conversation in today's age is probably not where it should be, right? And again, there's a lot of this digital revolution that's impacted on that. People don't know how to speak to people anymore, right? That kind of stuff. They don't know how to develop a conversation from listening to somebody and what they're saying and then responding with a thoughtful, intelligent question. People lack that in this day and age, I think. And I get it because people call me and spout a load of drivel, right? And I'm like, okay, that's not a great call, and I'll tell you why. But I think it's okay, we've got this amount of people. What's the minimum amount from that TAM that we would be happy with in terms of business for the next 12 months? Because out of that 10,000, you might only need 8 people to change your world, right? But people are focusing on, oh, I should have 50 meetings a week or I should have 50 meetings a month because our product is so strong and this. No one cares, right? Like, have the conversation, find out what's important to people, where they're at, and then that's going to give you a better indicator of where things are along their buyer journey and their buyer process and what you should be configuring for from your sales process.
It's like you knew what question was coming up next. It leads so nicely into what I'm going to ask you next. So, don't you ever seen this? But there's basically an equation for happiness. It's expectation meeting reality.
Right.
And we were talking about this off air a little bit, but if you manage the expectation part, the client tends to be happy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
With the reality of things.
Yeah.
So how can we better manage clients' expectations to make sure that both parties feel like, well, we said we'd do this, here's what you got, and yeah, you're right, I'm happy with the outcome.
Yeah. So I think it's about being able to have that brutally honest conversation, right? I think it's a human thing to want to let people know that that outcome that they want, you can get it for them, right? I think that that's part of all of us, right? That we want to be able to please people and get them to that desired outcome. But the truth is that by doing that, you just set false dawns, right? And then the reason why people get so upset is because you didn't articulate that actually this is going to be a hell of a lot harder than you think, and this is going to be the reason why. I think that it's. I think that the expectations piece is about being able to say, this is at its worst what could potentially happen. If that happens, how are you going to feel about that, right? Rather than focusing on the best possible outcome, if it's the worst possible outcome, and they can say to you, look, that's still fair because I get this, this, and this, and I can deal with that. Then at least you know that operating at best case, they're going to be over the moon and blown away with the stuff that you deliver. So being able to be honest and say, look, you know, this is probably, you're hoping for 3 months, it's going to take 12. And if that's going to be a problem for you, then we're probably not the company that you want to work with. You're likely going to go and want to explore the market, speak to somebody else that says that they can do it in 3 months and see what the outcome is there. If it delivers for you, then great. If it doesn't, then you know where I am and we can have another conversation. And I think that having the, it comes to salespeople, it comes to people like us as well, you know, detaching from that outcome of having a deal or selling to something to somebody and actually making sure that we have developed the right type of journey for them in terms of expectations, outcomes, activity that's going to be done, all that kind of good stuff. I think that that is where, you know, that's where the kind of the juice is. But that's not necessarily hard to achieve because it means challenging people. And it means really kind of blowing apart people's grand visions for what can be achieved and distilling it down into something that actually can be achieved and whether or not they're going to be happy with it.
Have you ever give someone that kind of honest take, they've gone away and then actually ended up coming back to you anyway?
Yeah. And I think that that was when I realized, like I said, I've been in that position before, right? Where somebody said, yeah, you know, I need this and this and this. And I'm like, yeah, we can get that. No problem, right? And then it turns out you can't get it. And then you have to look into the why you couldn't get it. So it definitely made me a lot more wary about how I develop these campaigns, you know, and that comes from the development of our own campaign. We've had to do that as well, right? But yeah, I think it's just a case of, you know, you've got to be able to have that conversation, just be able to say, okay, look, if we don't do a deal today, it's not going to impact on me in the way that it would have done 3, 4, 5 years ago, where I kind of think that it's all about me, why that deal didn't happen, right? It has to be the right deal for the buyer. It has to be the right deal for us. That's where your negotiation happens and all that stuff. And essentially, if you can get those things right, then there's also a little bit of room, right? There's also a little bit of room for, oh, okay, well, you know, these guys are doing this and maybe it's not quite there, but I see what they're doing and I know what they're doing. So I'm happy to keep riding that wave with them, right? Versus this kind of staunch, this is where we need to be and expected to be and you haven't been there, so do one, right? So I think that it's that there's a lot of these things combined in the process, and but you get to learn that out very quickly when you do something like this on your own.
It sounds like over the last 5 years, it's one of the biggest lessons that you've learned is that like attachment to outcome and how to kind of disattach yourself. So obviously so many salespeople listen to this and they kind of want to be disattached and there's no attachment to outcome whatever, and we promote it to our guys. It's very hard, especially when you're young. Like, we're at a point now where it's like we've had some harsh burns throughout the year, so it's like, okay, I'm not gonna get all hyped up and attached to this one because I know how life works. Was there anything that happened over the last 5 years which kind of was a pinpoint moment for you to say, that's it now, I'm not I'm changing my views, I'm changing the way I look at the world, and I'm just moving forward?
Yeah, so I'm in a bit of an offshoot to that. Having a kid, right? Having a kid, it kind of made me realise that you might want something for all the world, right? You ain't going to get it, right? That, what that kid's telling you, no, I'm not going to do this, no, I'm not going to do that. They're consistently on your ass and questioning you about all these things. And I think it came to a point where I was like, when people are trying to force things, they don't get what they want, right? And if they do get what they want, then it doesn't last. So I think that this kind of realization was, there's an element of patience required in order to get the outcome that you seek. How willing are you to be patient to that degree, right? And so I think that from once I kind of adopted that mindset, it changed things for me, because it became less about pushing things on people and pushing the result that I thought that I needed because of whatever the driver was behind that. It was more about, am I finding people that are the right fit? Am I finding people that I can have a beer with? Am I finding people that there's, you know, you can have those hard, frank conversations, but you're friends at the end of it. If I can find those types of people and build those types of relationships, then those are the types of people that I will go to bat for. And I will make sure that we do everything within our power to win a great result for, because ultimately it's those things that make me get out of bed every morning. The willingness to be able to go and push hard for something and for someone that I believe in, or their business that I believe in, because we've got that kind of equal footing, that equal standing, and we trust one another to be truthful to one another in difficult times, but also to know that there's going to be that focus on getting that person to where they need to get to, irrespective of whether or not they think that they're going to get there in that specific time that they've set out, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because it's, I think one of the biggest things that salespeople forget is it is 50-50. You know, either party can walk away at any time. You're bringing something to the table, they're bringing something, and you're working together. And you've said it a few times in terms of like that collaboration. Mm-hmm. But so many people don't. And there's a chapter in Keenan's book, which is, you're not your prospect's bitch. And I love that. And then when we do sales training, I've got a little slide and it's me on all fours on a little lead. And it's just reminding people that actually you're not their bitch. Like, you're there to help them. So why would you kind of just change? You wouldn't do that with your friends or with your romantic partners or your children. So why would you start applying that to your work life? It can be a bit crazy.
It's a good point. Sorry to jump in. It's a very good point. And I think that that's maybe what you're doing with your teams as well, right? The building of equal stature in someone's mind is not easy, especially when they're a young person coming into sales. They're speaking to CEOs or they're speaking to VPs and they're like, shit, this person has got so much more experience than me. I don't really have the right to be speaking to this person. But I think building that muscle in that person, in those teams and in those people, to be like, look, even on your worst day, you are still your prospect's equal, okay? So there's nothing that they have above you, irrespective of the accolades they might have and all of this stuff. You are speaking with them on a specific problem that you know that you can help with. And if they have that problem, then that's opening up a conversation for you to delve into the why, the how, the who, the what, and where they want to actually, how they actually want to kind of get out of that situation, right? How they want to better themselves. And if you're the person that lines that up for them, then absolutely, why would you not see yourself as anything other than an equal?
Yeah, and I think this is probably where a lot of sales leaders fail. It's a case of here's a script, here's the lead. It's so many sales trainers as well. It's like, here's all like the bit. This is how you actually like drive the car. But it's just like, understanding why a car, why the wheels, all of that bit, like the psychology behind it. Once you understand that, I think it's so important. And me and Zach have had conversations before. Like, I think that we know that with sales and young people, we're probably in 5 years' time, we're not going to have the exact same team now. Maybe not even in 3 or 1 year. That is just it. But if we can give these guys tools and skills that they might not have learned in other points in life, it's something that, as cheesy as it sounds, it feels like you're kind of giving value and you're giving back as well. So I do think that's important. Yeah. So I know that your offering is, there's different offerings when it comes to the table in terms of what you kind of give as a company. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's probably that marketing element in there as well. Mm-hmm. So the big question of the podcast, sales versus marketing, which one's better?
All right. So for me, maybe bias, but I'm going to say sales because sales speaks to the customer, right? Sales speaks to the prospects. Marketing is the one-to-many approach of getting a message out there to say, this is what we do and these are the benefits for you as a customer or as a potential customer. Whereas sales are actually finding out the nitty-gritty of that person's responsibilities, that person's struggles, that person's day-to-day, right? Marketing don't have that type of information. Marketing's ICP is job title, geography, industry, right? And they might split out by ages and all that kind of stuff. All right, that's fantastic. That doesn't tell you who Jack is. It doesn't tell you who Zach is, right? And so that's where I think that I'm definitely of the belief that sales is a subset of marketing, 100%, and they should be better aligned. But in terms of where I believe the value really comes from, I think it's sales. And I think it's going to be hard to change my mind on that.
I'm not going to try. I think it's one of those, marketing always has its place, but actually sales is getting to. So talk us through in terms of your offering, what points do you bring in that marketing offering?
So I think it's important to align with marketing once you understand where the actual prospect is, right? Because something that I strongly believe in and I've been saying today, lead generation it's not a thing because, yeah, okay, we're going to start making some calls now. This is lead generation. Lead generation doesn't start until your prospect is actually in the window to buy. That's lead generation, right? We're generating you leads based on people that are going to be willing to have a conversation about your product because they're looking for something like that. Before that, you've got to move somebody from not knowing about you guys, not knowing about your product, and then knowing about it, and then maybe they're starting to see some stuff pop up. Maybe they start to see some things on LinkedIn. Maybe they're starting to see a podcast of relevance or whatever that might be about this specific thing. That's where you're aligning with marketing. It's at that top part of the funnel to put things in front of your prospects that they need to see to make your brand or your offering synonymous with the problem that's going to come up on their horizon once they become aware of it, right? So I think that's the key kind of relationship that sales needs to have with marketing. It is, we've had all of these conversations this week. Out of these 100 conversations, 20% of those people were actively ready to buy, right? So sales is going to go in and now do a job in speaking to those people and getting them into a conversation. These other 80% are split between people that have got no idea who we are, or they're split into people that are kind of looking at what we're doing, right? And so therefore, these people need certain specific information, right? At the beginning of this process, they need this. During the kind of passive phase of looking, they need this type of information. And they need it spread out over this amount of time. I think that's the relationship that we should have with the marketing team, rather than being dictated to by marketing what is a good lead versus what isn't, because you've never spoken to them, so I don't really believe that your opinion holds as much water as you think it does.
Great answer. I think there's a lot in that. We've been having this conversation with our last few guests, and we spoke to a guy who's a business leader, and he's got a marketing team and a sales team, but he was saying one of the ways that he cracked this is saying you're both in charge of contributing 30% each to the pipeline of new business.
Right.
A month or whatever.
Yeah.
So that way sales can't moan about marketing because they might bring attention to themselves that they've not generated what they said. Mm-hmm. And marketing can't moan at sales because they're supposed to be generating it as well. So it kind of keeps people honest, which, yeah. I think it's so right, isn't it? A lot of people don't spend time on that alignment. They treat them as two separate entities.
Exactly that. Yeah, fighting against each other, right? Like, oh, yeah. Marvel provides leads, but the leads they provide are crap. Or sales don't actually action the leads that we give them, so they're not doing their job properly. But it's like, well, hold on a minute. Are we looking at this the right way? Because if sales have never spoken to those people, they're going based on an ICP and what they think should be right. But getting the feedback from sales to actually say, no, this is where these people are. Now let's fine tune the marketing collateral needed to get them into the next phase of their kind of buyer journey. Those conversations probably aren't happening anywhere near as much as they should be, I don't believe.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I feel like I could chat to you all day, mate. I'm sure Jack feels the same. We do have to wrap up, so I want to wrap up on a bit of a fluffy question, if we can.
Oh, okay.
We get a lot of people that are starting out on this journey. They're SDRs. They, you know, have you got any tips for me? If you could go back, knowing what you know now, to your first day on the phone, to your first day in a sales position where you had to go out and actually generate opportunities, generate meetings, what's something you wish you knew then that you know now?
I would say, and I'm sure you guys say the same thing, and probably a lot of sales leaders now that look back on their time say the same thing, but not tying your self-worth to doing a deal or to booking a meeting, right? But actually being focused on honing your craft and learning your trade and becoming a master of going out to your audience and developing conversations. If you can go out and have more conversations than everybody else and you can develop those conversations better than everybody else, then you will never ever be out of a job. You will always be able to feed yourself and your family, because what you're doing is you're putting in place the right types of practices to be able to understand people. And understanding people and their drivers for doing things and their whys behind doing things and what objectives and outcomes they're looking for, that all comes from having conversation. So just because you might go out there and, you know, you might book a meeting with somebody because you spoke to that person and you kind of forced them into it, doesn't deliver you the best end result. So being able to really take control of what you can control, which is learning more about yourself, learning more about others, developing conversations at a rate that other people can't, I think is going to put people in a much better position to win than the type of mentality that they may have, which is, I need to do this at all costs, otherwise I'm dead in the water. I don't think it works like that, and I think people need to be more aware of that.
Superb. Great answer. Look, I really appreciate you taking the time. I think you're a great person for the industry, very open and transparent. And along the way, you've helped us with stuff that you didn't have to. We've asked you about what system would you recommend, and we took your recommendation and now we use it. So anyone who is listening, I think you're a very accessible man to have a chat with. Watch you get hammered now with LinkedIn messages of people saying, how do I close a deal? For anyone who's interested in working with you, starting the process, just having a conversation, what is the best way to start that?
I'd say LinkedIn. Drop me a DM on LinkedIn. You can find me on there. Pretty active, as you've mentioned. Not as much as you boys. pretty active, and I'm always, I'll respond to people and always willing to find time to have a conversation. And it's actually the same, to be honest with you, for salespeople. I've had recently quite a lot of people coming to me just asking me if I've got some time to help them with certain things. And, you know, whilst I don't have an infinite amount of time, I believe it's always important to kind of invest and pay back to people that are in that sales community, because we might be a couple of steps ahead of some people, and the type of knowledge that we can give them to help them is going to be, you know, really kind of change the game for them. So I think it's important to be able to add that in as well. So hit me up on LinkedIn. Otherwise, you can reach me on antoine@salesdriven.com and I'll respond to you on email.
Perfect. Appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
No, it's been a pleasure. I'm looking forward to seeing what it's like when it comes out.
We're stopping. It says it's stopping.